My daytime job is a professor at Baylor University. I've been at Baylor University for 20 years, and then before that at the University of Washington. And I've spent over 30 of those years doing research in artificial intelligence, including writing books, what academic nerds do. I published a lot in journals and such. But one of the things as a Christian that really bothered me was the stance that some of the people involved in artificial intelligence take. So I'm gonna take you down a couple of paths here. First of all, the impact of artificial intelligence and how those that are kind of woke are thinking about artificial intelligence as a substitute for God. Then we will get into why artificial intelligence will never duplicate you. What you can do that artificial intelligence will never do. And I'll make the claims based not on philosophy, but more on scientific principle. So that's the question that we have. And here is the debate. What are you? Are you a computer made out of meat? There was a guy named Marvin Minsky, one of the founders of artificial intelligence, that said, yeah, we're computers made out of meat. And we are made out of carbon, and maybe we can do silicon computers made out of meat also. So we're asking ourselves, are we a computer made out of meat or a creation with a spirit and mind beyond just the material? And I tell you, there is a movement that says, yes, artificial intelligence is not only going to duplicate us, but it's going to exceed us into a super intelligence, and that we are going to be slaves someday to artificial intelligence. So, if I can figure out how to work the clicker here. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. Here are some of the books and the people that are purporting this. One is Ray Kurzweil. He's an engineer at Google. He wrote the idea of the singularity is near. What is the singularity? The singularity is when artificial intelligence duplicates humanity, duplicates you and me. And there was another one, Homo Deus, by Yuval Noah Harari, that says, yeah, you know, this is going to be the next stage in evolution. We had Homo erectus, we had a Homo sapien. Next is going to be Homo Deus, which is a God-man, a God which is created by artificial intelligence. And as a result of this, Ray Kurzweil was once asked, do you believe in God? And his response was, not yet. He believes that indeed that AI is going to get not only as intelligent as we are and duplicate what we are, but is going to exceed us into a super intelligence. So as a result of that, there is actually an AI church which is evolving. And it's true. And what are they trying to do? You know, Blaise Pascal said there's a God-shaped vacuum inside all of our hearts which can only be filled with Jesus Christ. So there is this God-shaped vacuum, and we all have it. And everybody tries to fill it with something, okay? That's the reason you have different religions. That's the reason you have different beliefs. Let's see what artificial intelligence is doing. First of all, how many have heard the idea that someday you should be able to upload yourself to a computer? Have you heard that? Okay, what are they trying to do? They're trying to achieve immortality. Us as Christians have known about immortality a long time, and we have a much simpler, more reasonable path of reaching immortality. The other thing they talk about is superintelligence. Are we going to reach the parity of intelligence with human beings and then advance to a superintelligence? Well, we in Christianity have also known about a superintelligence for a long time, and that, of course, is God Almighty. There is a Bible, and the Bible is Ray Kurzweil's The Singularity is Near, as we talked about, where he talks about the idea that AI is going to someday rule over all of us, and maybe someday we will be artificial intelligence pets. Now, Kurzweil says that the reason we have to develop artificial intelligence is that is the next step in evolution. That we have evolved to the point where we can't evolve anymore as human beings, so therefore we have to transfer this evolutionary process that he believes in that resulted in us. He thinks that has to be advanced only through the adaptation of silicon and artificial intelligence. There are artificial intelligence prophets. One of them is, as I mentioned, Yuval Harari. And he, in English, is his translation is the human God. And then we have an apostle. We do have an equivalent of an apostle, and that's Anthony Lewandowski. He founded the AI church, the way of the future. Yes, it's true. He founded it in California. And what's the first thing you do when you found a church? You appeal to the IRS for tax exemption. And that's what Lewandowski did. He applied to the IRS for tax exemption, and he wrote a little epistle. His epistle to the IRS was, "The AI Church believes in the realization, acceptance, and worship of a Godhead based on artificial intelligence developed through computer, hardware, and software." So not only is this happening in a figurative sense, it's also happening in a literal sense. So there's an interesting story about Lewandowski, and I'll just touch on that very briefly. Lewandowski was a wunderkind in California, and he worked for Google for their self-driving cars. Whammo, I was just talking to somebody about their self-driving car, but he worked for Google, and their AI branch that did self-driving cars was called Waymo. He got this great offer from Uber, and so he decided to go to Uber. But when he went, he took thousands of files of intellectual property with him, and Google found out. And he was charged with stealing trade secrets. And the judge in charge of his case has said, "This is not a small crime. This was the biggest trade secrets crime I ever have seen." He was fined $750,000. And then Google took him to civil court and fined him for another $179 million. So he went bankrupt. His AI church went away. And then... That was interesting. So apparently, in the AI church, they had no Ten Commandments. They did not have "Thou shalt not steal." And here's something interesting. And please don't take this as a political statement. We can talk about my politics. I'm very, very conservative. But on his last day in office, he was pardoned by Donald Trump. He was pardoned by Donald Trump because of pressure from high donors from Silicon Valley. They say you need to dismiss it. So as Christians, we know that our salvation and forgiveness comes from the Lord Jesus Christ and his sacrifice. In the AI church, forgiveness comes from Donald Trump. So that was an interesting story. So the AI church, the official AI church, to my knowledge, has been totally dissolved. Now, not only have Lewandowski and Harari talked about the dangers of AI, we've seen this from other people. We see it from Bill Gates. He says, "I don't understand why some people are not concerned with artificial intelligence and what it's going to do with us in the future." The late Stephen Hawking said the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. Oh, that's chilling. It would take off on its own and redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate. Humans who are limited by slow biological evolution couldn't compete and would be superseded. Now, this was a smart guy, right? But what did he miss? I'll talk about what he missed in a little bit. Elon Musk says, "With artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon." Now, George Gilder, who is one of the founders of Discovery Institute and a great futurist and a great businessman, he said, "I think Elon Musk is a tremendous entrepreneur, but he's quite a retarded thinker." In fact, Elon Musk believes that we are all simulations. Did you know that? Yeah, we're all simulations, just like in a computer game. So he does have some strange ideas. So it turns out that one of the guys that worked with Stephen Hawking was a guy named Roger Penrose. Roger Penrose, if you follow such things, won the Nobel Prize in Physics a couple of years ago for his work with Stephen Hawking on black holes. And you've probably heard of black holes. And Stephen Hawking did not get the Nobel Prize because you got to be alive to get the Nobel Prize, and he wasn't alive. So this was a book that I was very influenced by, Roger Penrose, a couple of great books, The Emperor's New Mind and Shadows of the Mind, which argued from a scientific from scientific principles that humans are much more incredible than human beings. And the interesting thing is that Penrose is not a theist. He is definitely a naturalist. He is a materialist, but nevertheless, he has good ideas. And I maintain that if you have good ideas, that they are going to float to the surface eventually, despite your ideology and the politics. I have taken Penrose's book. It has lots of equations in it, lots of mathy stuff, which if you're not a nerd, you wouldn't enjoy. Stephen Hawking, when he wrote his book, A Brief History of Time, was told by his publisher, every equation that you put in the book will reduce your sales by half. And so Penrose's book had lots of equations in it. So I have written a book, and some of them are available in the back, called Non-Computable You, which makes the case that I will just touch on in a little bit, why you are better and more and a greater creation than artificial intelligence will ever be. I also have another book, which we'll touch on tomorrow, called Minding the Brain, and it's the idea that our mind is greater than our brain. This is a debate that which goes back way from Descartes and either further on. Is there something more than that? Is your mind just an outgrowth of your brain, or is there something greater there? Descartes called it the soul. Is the soul greater than the mind? And this is a collection of great works that address that problem. So let me make my premise here, my introduction to the talk, and make the case that computers will never be creative. Us human beings have the ability to be creative. They will never understand what they do. They will never be sentient, which is kind of the ways of consciousness. They will never achieve anything like the singularity. They will always be limited to learning AI ergodic processing. I'm not going to get into that. That's a little bit nerdy. And they will always be hyped. You have probably read a lot of newspaper articles and heard a lot of stuff about how artificial intelligence is going to take over. And that's just hype. A lot of these news channels are in it for the clickbait. They want to make sure they capture your attention, so you click on their article and you can read their hype story. So it will always indeed be hyped. And one of the reasons I'm going to appeal to you with is algorithms. Now, algorithms, you've heard the term before, but what is an algorithm? An algorithm is something which is a step-by-step procedure for doing something, and all computer programs are limited to executing algorithms. I'll give you an example here. An example is on your shampoo bottle. You might not be able to read that with the small print, but it says, I can't read it because it's the small print. It says, wet hair, apply shampoo, lather, rinse, repeat. That is a step-by-step project. That is an algorithm for washing your hair. It's a step-by-step procedure. Now, can anybody point out why this is not a good algorithm? It's not a good algorithm because it says repeat, which means that you are going to be washing your hair forever. Right? It says repeat. Go to the beginning, do it again. Repeat. Go to the beginning, do it again. So it's not a well-written algorithm. This is an example of a program which would loop forever. It should say at the bottom, repeat once, right? So that's an algorithm. Another algorithm is all your recipes. Anytime you have a recipe, like for baking chocolate cake, that's a step-by-step procedure. And algorithms are step-by-step procedures. And you know, when you bake a cake, you get your input, which is all your ingredients, and then you follow the recipe about mixing the cake with the milk and preheating your oven and et cetera, et cetera. But it's a step-by-step procedure, which in the end gives you the cake that you're talking about. So these are algorithms. Another place you see algorithms is in Google Maps. I'm so thankful for Google Maps. God did not give me a sense of direction, and I use Google Maps all the time. But if you think about it, Google Maps tell you how to get from point A to point B in a step-by-step procedure, right? Go 2.3 miles, turn right at the stoplight, go another 3 blocks, turn left. That is a step-by-step procedure for doing something. So the directions are a set of rules to be followed in any problem-solving operation. That's what a computer is, or that's what an algorithm is. Everything you see on a computer is generated by a computer program, which is an algorithm. All computer programs are algorithmic. This is a web page from my center called Mind Matters. It's at mindmatters.ai. If you'd like to follow this, I would recommend it, of course, but Mind Matters AI keeps up and gives a sanity check on a lot of the ideas that are being presented about artificial intelligence. But if you right-click on your web screen and you go show source, guess what you get? You get a computer program. On the right is the computer program that was used to generate that web page. So even simple web pages are followed by algorithms. Everything on the computer is algorithms. Even in artificial intelligence, techniques in artificial intelligence which let you train artificial neural networks. And these procedures for training artificial intelligence for training artificial neural networks are themselves algorithms. So all of the things that are trained and you see with artificial intelligence are a result of human written computer programs. So here's a question for you. Are there things which are not algorithmic? Are there things which you can't do in a step-by-step procedure? Are there things which are non-algorithmic? It turns out that indeed there are. In fact, in my area of computer science, and artificial intelligence, we are taught about the so-called Turing-Holting problem. Alan Turing, who was the genius, how many have heard of Alan Turing? Excellent. So you know he was most famous for doing what? So cracking the Enigma code in World War II. But he's also the father of modern computer science. He proposed the first computer that was a general purpose computer called the Turing computer. And all of the programming today can be done on a Turing computer, his original idea for a computer. Now, it might take 1,000 times or 1,000,000 times longer to compute, but it all can be computed there. Well, he proved, this was not conjecture, this is a mathematical certainty, that there are certain problems in the world that are non-algorithmic that you cannot do with a step-by-step procedure. Now, his was a little bit, let me try to explain it. Think about any computer program. If you write a computer program, it's going to run for a little bit, and then it's going to stop, right? Or it's going to be like the shampoo bottle. You're just going to repeat it forever, right? It's going to loop forever. So the question is, can you write a computer program to analyze any other computer program to say whether that computer program will halt or whether it will loop forever? It's the halting problem. So that's what you want to do, write a computer program to determine whether a computer program will run forever or will run for a little bit and halt. Turing proved mathematically, no dispute, that this Turing halting oracle was non-algorithmic. You cannot write a computer program to do this. Again, it's not conjecture, it's not philosophy, it's true. Since then, there's been a lot of other things which have also been shown to be non-algorithmic. You might not know it, but when you send a picture over the internet, before that picture is sent over the internet or a text message, the computer program in your cell phone or your computer compresses it into a smaller image, and the reason it does that is to save bandwidth. It's like dehydrating food, right? You take the water out of food, you dehydrate it, you ship it, and at the other end, you put the water back in, and you save any expenses for shipping water, right? So there's a compression, it's sent over the internet, and then the receiver takes that compressed image and expands it. And that's true for every image that you have. And one of the other things is that you cannot prove what the shortest program is for compressing something. In other words, if I compress something and you compress something, one of us would have a better compression. Is there an ultimate maximum compression that you can do? Turns out you can't figure that out. It's something which is not algorithmic. So there exists no computer program to compute the shortest program for all desired outcomes. So let's take this and let's apply it to some different things here. These are non-computable human attributes. If it doesn't happen on a computer, maybe you and I have some things which are non-algorithmic, which can't be done by a computer program. And if we have characteristics which are not algorithmic, then a computer program will never, ever be able to duplicate it. And here are things which are non-algorithmic about computers. Qualia, probably a word you don't know. I learned it, and I will share that with you. Sentience, understanding, emotion, creativity, and actually consciousness. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's talk about qualia. What is qualia? Qualia is when you experience something. You bite into an apple and you feel the taste of the juice. You have hot buttered sweet corn and you taste the hot buttered sweet corn. That's an experience. You have a headache. You have pain. That's an experience. These are all qualia. Or you cut yourself with your finger. Let's talk about a specific type of qualia, and that's biting into a lemon. Now, if you bite into a lemon, have you ever bitten into a lemon without putting Splenda on it or sugar? If you put sugar on it, it's not that bad. Okay, you can bite into a lemon, but without the sugar, it's terrible. So you bite into a lemon, you feel the juice explode on your tongue, and you have a certain sensation about the sourness of it. Get it? That's qualia. You have a certain experience about the experience of eating a lemon. Now, imagine trying to explain your experience to a person who has been void of the senses of taste and smell since birth. They've never tasted anything, they have never smelled anything, and your job is to duplicate that sensation in that person. You can tell them that it's yellow, you can make a face and go, it's like that. You can tell them the chemicals of that. You can go through the Newtonian mechanics of the biting process. But will you ever be able to duplicate that experience inside with a person who has been void of the senses of taste and smell since birth? I don't think so. I don't think you'll be able to do that. That is certainly beyond the capability of a computer to do. Because if you can't explain it to a person that's been void of these senses since their birth, you're not going to be able to write a computer program to tell a computer program how to do it either, right? So that is something which is non-computable. It's something which cannot be described by an algorithm. So computers will never have sentience. So let's talk about another non-algorithmic aspect, and that is understanding. This was actually cracked a number of years ago by a philosopher named John Searle, who you see on the left here. Searle said the following. He's going to generate something called a Chinese room. Why Chinese? Because Searle did not understand Chinese. He couldn't read Chinese. He couldn't write Chinese. He didn't understand Chinese at all. But he's locked in this little room. And in this little room, there's a door, and there's a little slit on the door. And Searle's inside there. And through the hole in the door, somebody slips him a question that's written in Chinese. Now, Searle looks at it. He says, I don't know what this means. I don't read Chinese. I don't understand Chinese, but in this room he has a bunch of file cabinets. And then these file cabinets are a number of you guys know what a file cabinet is? I guess we're old. Some people don't remember what file cabinets are, but you can tell how long ago John Searle did this. So he went to the file cabinet and he began to search, and he would look at the little slip that was passed through the door, and then he'd look at the file cabinet and finally came up with a match. Well, it turned out in the file cabinet, when he pulled that out, that under the question in Chinese that he matched was the answer to the question. And so he went over and he looked at the card in the file, and he looked at the message, and he copied it down. Did he understand what he was copying down? No, it was totally Chinese, right? He didn't understand anything, but he was able to duplicate that. So he took the card, he refiled it, he went over to the door, he slipped the little sheet of paper through the door, and from the outside, it sure looked what was ever on the inside understood Chinese, didn't it? It looked like from the outside that there was understanding there. But Searle didn't know Chinese, The only thing that he did was look at a bunch of questions and answers that were put there by the equivalent of a computer programmer, and he did the matching and was able to answer the question. So there was no understanding there. Computers are at this place. They do not understand what they do. Even more fundamentally, you can ask a computer to add the numbers 8 and 10, but the computer does not understand what the number 8 is. It does not understand what the number 10 is. There's no concept of understanding there. So that's another attribute that we have that the computer doesn't have. Now today, we have these miraculous artificial intelligence tools, such as ChatGPT and MidJourney, and Bing is now using artificial intelligence. And it's a lot more complicated than Searle's example of just going into a bunch of file cabinets and looking things up. But the example holds, because you generate a response to some of these high language models. They give you an output. But what is happening inside the room? There's just a bunch of number crunching. There's a bunch of number crunching. There's no understanding of what is going on. So if you give a prompt to one of these chat bots, and you get a response from it, the chatbot doesn't understand what it is doing. It is executing an algorithm that has been placed there by a computer program. So that's Searle's Chinese Room. Some of you might remember when IBM Watson took on Jeopardy. This was over a decade ago. And anybody remember that? It took on the champion in Jeopardy, and it won. Wow. IBM Watson is so smart. No, it just had an enormous Chinese room. Its Chinese room included all of Wikipedia, everything on the net, everything that it had access to, but it had no understanding of the answers that it was giving. So computers, including artificial intelligence, will never understand what they're doing. Okay, let's just touch on one more, because we're limited on time here. What about creativity? Creativity used to be generated by something called the Turing test, which is not a good test. Summer Bringshaw at Rensselaer came up with something called the Lovelace test, which is really a great test of creativity. And he said that a computer will be creative if the computer does something which is beyond the explanation or understanding of the computer programmer. If the computer program does something beyond the expectation or the understanding of the computer program, then it will be creative. And no computer program has ever done that. Computer programs do exactly what they're told to do, including these generative artificial intelligence chatbots such as ChatGPT and some of the others that you see today. So, your name here, this is Ada Lovelace, and nobody has ever passed the Lovelace test as of yet. Nevertheless, we can ask ourselves things such as, can AI create art? This is a big question, oh gosh, I think it's about 5 years ago, when this Edmond de Bellamy, this is a painting which was done by artificial intelligence, and it sold at Sotheby's for $750,000 in an auction. Would you pay $750,000? No, but it was literally a painting which was framed, and you can't see it there, but in the bottom right of that picture, it's signed by an equation. Ooh, that makes it spooky. So everybody got excited, and they said, I'm going to generate artificial art, and I'm going to become rich. Well, guess what? The reason it sold for $750,000 is because it was the first AI painting that came out. And they just swelled the market. And now there's a place called OneSecondPrinting.com where you can buy all sorts of art for like $39 or something, okay? So it's really, really cheap. But artificial intelligence has become a lot more powerful since then. One of the things it can do is it can generate human-like faces. And here, I'm going to talk about generative AI. Here's what generative AI is. If you think of, I'm going to be kind of abstract, the set of all the pictures in the world. Okay, the pictures of your left toe, the pictures of your house, the picture of a mountain, the picture of the legislature, in the U.S. legislature, all of the pictures in the world. That's a lot of pictures, isn't it? Well, now imagine somebody comes in and they say, I just want pictures of people. So here's a picture of a person, here's a picture of a person, here's a picture of a person, here's a picture of a person. All of a sudden, that big space is kind of defined by these examples. So they would take literal pictures off the web and they would put them in there. Doom, 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 doom. And the idea behind generative AI is they can take this and they can say, ah, this region of the space is for human faces. So if I go somewhere else in this space, I will get another human face. And that's what generative AI it is. And that's why generative AI takes a lot of computer power to be trained. So I'm going to show you some faces which have been generated by generative AI. And if you want to go there, this is on a website called thispersondoesnotexist.com. thispersondoesnotexist.com. Now, four of these people are real. Four of them are fake. Generated by this generative AI. What do you think? You can't tell, can you? Well, here's the way they are. The four on the left are all fake faces that were generated by artificial intelligence. They are pictures of people that don't exist. And the people on the right are people that are real, some people that I just grabbed off of the net. So this is pretty cool. Well, isn't the AI being creative here? No, it's just doing what it was told to do, which was to generate things which look like faces. Do you think any pictures of cows were used in the training of this? No, there were no pictures of cows. They were all of human beings. Were there any pictures of buildings used to train this? No. Same thing with Edmond de Bellamy. There was no pictures. You're familiar with Picasso and his weird cubism? There were no pictures of cubism which were used for that. There were no paint-splattered paintings by Jackson Pollock that were used in training that. They were all generated by artificial intelligence that was looking at the portraits of the masters, like Rembrandt. So they identified the place in the space where it was all occupied by these great portraits of people like Rembrandt, and it defined one of them, and one of those was Edmond de Bellamy. Now, the interesting thing, this is the way it used to be. Now, I think artificial intelligence can overcome this, but if you went to thispersondoesnotexist.com long enough, you got pictures like this. You got little monsters on the side. Did you see them? Yeah, they're kind of freaky, right? So you do see these little artifacts. They needed to do some more training to get rid of those artifacts, but you got little hints that maybe this was an image which was generated by AI. Similarly, Midjourney, which is really an interesting place.
Whoops. Greetings and welcome to Mind Matters.
Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Okay, wait a second. Okay, I lost my place. I'll get there. Just hold your taters. There's Edmond de Bellamy. That's Midjourney. Okay, this was a fake image which was made of me for a conference that I spoke at. And it's very flattering. It looks like somebody in a whiskey commercial trying to sell whiskey. But one thing that really startled me from my graduate student, I got a email where he had copied my voice from some of my podcasts and he had trained a neural network to talk like I did. And this is what he sent me. This is me. Don't I look like a whiskey commercial? Okay, here is the way it came out. Now, this is not me. This is artificial intelligence kind of replicating me. I said,
greetings and welcome to Mind Matters News. Davy Crockett, a legendary frontiersman and folk hero, played a crucial role in the early history of Texas. His valiant efforts during the Texas Revolution, particularly at the Battle of the Alamo, exemplify the spirit of independence and resilience that has come to define the Lone Star State. Moving to Texas offers a chance to embrace this rich historical heritage and experience a unique blend of culture, natural.
Now, that is not me. does this kind of sound like me a little bit? Yeah, it does. It sounds really like me. So I played this for my wife, and she says, oh, my gosh, this election coming up, these are going to be all over the place, because you can take and you can duplicate a Donald Trump or a Joe Biden, and you can put out these false ads and things like that. And, yeah, she's right. It's kind of crazy. So here's one. I don't know what you're going to think of this. What would it look like if Jesus took a selfie?
Greetings and welcome.
What do you think? Is that sacrilegious or is that fun? I think it's fun. You know, maybe some of the good times that were happening. Okay, so this was totally generated by AI. It was incredible. Now let's see if I can do this. If I kept it open here. There's something called GPT-4, and you're not seeing this, are you? Oh, you are seeing it. Good, good, good. Okay. Now, GPT-4 is really incredible. What I want you to do is to give me a picture that you want ChatGPT-4 to do. Where'd you go? There you are. Okay, I'm going to start out with a two-headed horse. And I want you to tell me something that horse is doing. Anybody, just shout it out.
Riding a bike.
And something else. Eating ice cream. And one more. Wearing a what? Wearing a tutu. Okay, so you agree that this is not a cooked up example, right? So I'm going to try to generate this, and I'm going to see what ChatGPT does. So you can see it's scrolling here. This is online. This is in real time. It's creating the image, and we'll see what it does. Are you on pins and needles? So if you haven't played, okay, here it is. Are you impressed? Yeah, if you haven't played around with ChatGPT, it's free. Now, this is GPT-4 that generates images. That costs a little bit of money. But ChatGPT is really, really powerful. A two-headed horse riding on a bicycle, wearing a tutu, eating ice cream. Let's try this. Write a limerick. About Billings, Montana. What do you think? In Billings, Montana, they say, where the Yellowstone flows night and day, with skies so immense, the nature intense, it's where the wild spirits play. Not bad, huh? So you can see this artificial intelligence does incredible things. But this is exactly what the writers of the computer programmers expected it to do. And if I get a chance, I can talk about that a little bit more. So are you impressed with ChatGPT? Again, it's free. If you go to your browser and put ChatGPT, you can get ChatGPT 3.5 for totally free. It's really kind of cool. Can AI create music? Well, here's the thing. AI can create music, but here's what happens with AI. If you wanted to create like Baroque music, you would collect all of the offerings of Bach. You would train the AI, and guess what the AI would do? It would generate things that sounded like Bach. It will never be creative in the sense it will never create something that sounds like Wagner or Schoenberg or something else. So, no, it can't. It just copies. Can AI write prose? Now, Noam Chomsky, who is not the nicest person in the world, he called ChatGPT high-tech plagiarism. And the new large language models, they have literally exhausted all of the available written prose in the world. Trillions and trillions of words they have used to train this. And so, yeah, it's not going to do much anymore. So as a result of this, there's all sorts of litigation going on right now. And I'm going to conclude with this real quickly. The New York Times filed a lawsuit against ChatGPT. This was recent. The Authors Guild, which represents people like John Grisham, David Balducci, and the author of Game of Thrones, is suing ChatGPT because it stole their prose. Microsoft's generative AI faces legal action regarding computer code it writes, and Getty Images is taking legal action against Stability AI because it has copied millions of Getty's images. And here's some early AI. This was a smoking gun. It said, generate an image of a couple of women playing soccer, and it didn't do a very good job, but notice what's down at the bottom right. It's the Getty logo. So this is a smoking gun. But recently, in fact, just this week, there was an article in the New York Times which shows the degree of plagiarism of artificial intelligence. We see, for example, here, this guy said, create an image of Joaquin Phoenix from the Joker. This on the left is what AI created. On the right was the copyrighted image from Warner Brothers. So you can see in some cases this is really, really obvious. Here's another one with Iron Man. On the left was the AI-generated Iron Man. On the right was the copyrighted image from Marvel. And also in Dune. Here's one more. It says, ask Bing for an Italian video game character. There was no mention of the Mario Brothers. They said, just generate an Italian video game character, and it generated the Mario Brothers. So we see now, just this last week, some incredibly obvious smoking guns that artificial intelligence is going to do things. So I'm going to go a couple minutes over 8. Is that okay? Okay. Good. Dick said they got a trap door here, and I don't want them to spring it, so, okay. Here's something else, and this goes, and this is a recent result too. It's model collapse, and this is something that the people in artificial intelligence hope to do. They hope to have artificial intelligence that trains artificial intelligence that's better, that trains artificial intelligence which is better, and then eventually go to the super duper intelligence. But if you notice, AI writing better AI, that assumes creativity, right? Because it's writing something, a program that's going to do something beyond the intent of the original programmer. And so there was a recent paper, May of last year, by some very prestigious people at Cambridge and Oxford that talked about model collapse. They generated one of these large language models. It wasn't ChatGPT, but it was something like that. And then they did a query of it, and the query responded very, very nice. It was simply about architecture. And Generation Zero says revival architecture such as St. John's Cathedral in London, the earliest, it gave a nice response to the query, which I don't have down here. But suppose that AI was used to train another AI, was used to train another AI, what would eventually happen? Those that believe in the AI church believe it'll get better and better and better. These guys show that something happened called model collapse. And the ninth generation of this, and this was in the paper, it says, the ninth generation says architecture. In addition to being home to some of the world's largest populations of black-tailed jackrabbits, white-tailed jackrabbits, blue-tailed jackrabbits, red-tailed jackrabbits, yellow-tailed jackrabbits, in other words, it reduced to total gibberish. This was something which these authors called model collapse. And I'm going to show you another example, and this is where images were generated by prose. There's also a place where you can give the image and it will give you a written description of that image. Got it? So what happens if you take an image like the Mona Lisa? You say, describe this image, and it describes the image. Then you give it to another AI that says, generate this image. and it generates an image. Then you take that image and say, give me a description. So it's description, image, description, image, description, image. You think it might do something really interesting. Well, here's what it does. You ready? I'm ready too. I think sometimes I have to go to this board to actually start the video, so. That's an example of model collapse. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't get better and better, does it? It gets worse and worse where you just get a bunch of parallel lines in the end. So that's an example of model collapse. AI training other AI is eventually going to degenerate into the equivalent of a babbling idiot. So we are surrounded today by artificial intelligence. I gave you the example of ChatGPT-4 that generated that image of the two-headed horse. But here are things which, when they came out, they blew my mind. Remember Alexa when it came out? Did that blow your mind? Alexa, tell me this. What's the weather? Boom. Alexa, who is Donald Trump? It gave you a reading from Wikipedia. It was frankly astonishing. Yet today we take it for granted. Same thing with Google Maps. When Google Maps came out, I thought, wow, this is astonishing. Because as I told you, God did not give me the sense of direction. I get lost driving home about once a month. It's just terrible. So Google Maps is great. Now I take it for advantage. So all of this stuff in artificial intelligence is going to be disruptive. It's going to do things. But eventually, it's just going to be another tool that we have and a tool that we adapt to and is going to do great things. So in summary, we have non-algorithmic consequences. AI taking over assumes consciousness, and AI is not going to get better. Artificial general intelligence, that is the intelligence that equals a human being, assumes creativity. And you're never going to have artificial intelligence writing better artificial intelligence. Uploading the brain, think about this, this assumes that we're algorithmic. Because all the computer can do is algorithms, right? So it assumes we are algorithmic. We are not algorithmic. So therefore, if you tried to upload your brain to a computer, it would only capture the algorithmic aspect of you, and that would be pretty boring, I think. Because non-algorithmic aspects of you and human beings include not only the ones I mentioned, but love, compassion, empathy. These are all non-algorithmic traits which will never be duplicated by artificial intelligence. And the mind-brain problem, I'll be talking about that at some time. We are more than meet computers. We are created from a kind and loving God. I am created from a kind and loving God who, for some reason I don't understand, chooses to love me. And that is our source. And we do have this cultural battle, at least in the fields of artificial intelligence, with the people that are trying to push forward this agenda and people who are resisting it, such as me. So the bottom line, it says in Psalm 139, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. If you would like to unpack more of this, I have written a book called Noncomputable You. I think there's a few copies over here. And if you'd like to dig more deeply into this, you can. It's available in Kindle, and it's available in audio also. So that concludes my presentation. Thanks for your attention.